dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the War of Ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. One of the most important battle spaces, arguably, of that war, not widely understood as such, but very real nonetheless, is known as 5G. It's the fifth generation of wireless technology, and the battle for it is with China. And China, unfortunately, has stolen a march on the United States, not just in Asia or in Africa or in Latin America or in Europe, but worldwide. And that would mean increasingly, unfortunately, I'm afraid, a threat to us here at home as well. To discuss what's at stake and what a recent announcement of the President of the United States and Ajit Pai, the chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, about how we're going to compete in this battle space, I am very pleased to welcome back Declan Ganley. He is the chairman and CEO of Rivada Networks. He is an accomplished entrepreneur, successful network builder in the 5G space, the owner of several important patents for 5G-relevant technology, and a man with a clarity about both what's at stake in this 5G contest as well as what we must do to prevail in it. And it ain't what was announced last week. Declan Ganley, it's so good to have you back. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, Frank.
Well, let's start by scene setting. This is a bit of a reprise. Those of you who have been following Secure Freedom Radio in recent months will remember we've talked with Declan on several occasions, including hour-long programs, and I'm always appreciative of his time, but especially in the wake of this announcement. But before we get to the announcement, though, just remind us, Declan, what 5G is at present and what it pretends to be, especially if it is in the hands of the Chinese dominant technology company, Huawei.
Well, 5G, Frank, is the next generation or next standard of wireless phone device communications, but it's a huge leap forward. It's as big a leap as the one we made when we went from not having mobile phones or cell phones to having cell phones. It's almost as big a leap as that. In fact, I think it is a big, in some ways, the economic impact will be an even bigger leap.
Because it's not just about phones, after all. This is going to be much, much more, right?
That's exactly right. It's about connected devices. It's going to touch so many aspects of your lives, from how you work day to day, agriculture, healthcare, how information is moved, the value of information, how our economies function, the economic activity that will become engaged with and in many ways dependent on 5G technology will be more than half of the economy and affect every industry that you know of and several industries in the future that don't even exist yet. It is a massive change in economics and in the way that we communicate and the way devices communicate. And it is going to be the cardiovascular system of information, intelligence, and how we interact with the world around us.
Not just the central nervous system. This is going to be actually how data flows in a world in which information is king. So just to drill down on that very quickly, and I want to make sure we leave time to discuss China, but what about this Internet of Things and the impact that it will have on our lives, and in particular, the implication if it is, in fact, controlled by hostile powers like China?
Well, there are five domains of strategic conflict, potentially. So there's land, sea, air, space, and cyber. And 5G is the cardiovascular system, the central nervous system of the future cyber network. Every edge device on that network will interact, or most of them will interact with 5G somewhere, somehow. So if we allow China to succeed in architecting that fifth domain, it means that China would obviously have a huge advantage over the rest of the world in that area. And in the next great conflict, and God forbid there ever would be one, but in the next great war, the Pearl Harbor events will happen in the cyber domain. The first 10 minutes of the next great war will be fought in that domain, and 5G networks could potentially play a pivotal role in that.
Yeah. And when you say architecting, what does that mean in terms of what China is currently doing, Declan Gunley?
It means equipment, the equipment over which these networks operate and function being designed, built, manufactured, and shipped from China by Chinese companies using Chinese technology. It's not that I've described this before on one of your programs before. It would be like having all your aircraft carriers and all of your nuclear submarines being built in China by Chinese contractors. It doesn't mean you have to have a People's Liberation Army crew inside of them all of the time. But if you know where all the welds are, if you know the metallurgy, you know the engine temperatures, how everything runs and operates, and what the weak points are in those systems, you obviously have a distinct advantage.
Yeah, and especially relevant to this, if you're actually able to provide information about the whereabouts of those vessels, that would be sort of comparable to what this system might enable the Chinese to do in terms of information, in terms of controlling it. So in terms of the Internet of Things, specifically, Chinese control of the architecture of it, as you say, would enable them, among other things, presumably to, well, disrupt, manipulate, or perhaps even weaponize the Internet of Things against us, would it not?
Absolutely. Look, there are things that you can do to try and mitigate that risk. But obviously, if you're using the technology and equipment provided by your potential future adversary, you are at a distinct disadvantage. You are immediately on the defensive, and that's not a place you want to begin from.
No, that's correct. Lastly, and very quickly, before we have to take a short break, Declan Gunley, what is Huawei specifically getting away with doing now around the world?
What Huawei and another Chinese company, ZTE, are doing is they are using subsidies, cheap financing, which is the hook that they are using, to get Western retail mobile carriers, all of whom are struggling because they have an obsolescent business model. They're getting them to sign up and deploy Chinese equipment for 5G because the Chinese government, indirectly, Beijing, are prepared to subsidize it. And it's a cheap way of getting dominance in the global cyber domain is by having these mobile wireless carriers in the UK and Spain and France and Italy and many other countries sign up with the Chinese suppliers because the Chinese suppliers massively subsidize the equipment and the technology.
So they get their hooks in the carriers and then in governments and then in the people who will be using this technology to our very considerable detriment. Declan Gunley, we're going to ask you to hold on just a moment. We're going to come back right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. We are visiting with Declan Gunley, one of our sources on matters involving 5G. He is, to be sure, an interested party. He knows a lot about this business. He is in the business. Rivada Networks is his company, an American-based firm that is competing, or trying to compete, with the folks who are trying to dominate this 5G, fifth generation wireless technology domain, with all of the implications that we've been discussing with him, commercial, public safety, and national security, not least. Declan, we were discussing what is the challenge. Let's talk about what was announced last Friday by Ajit Pai, the chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, in the presence of Donald Trump?
Well, first of all, the president's comments on you know, the economic impact of 5G were absolutely spot on. He's 100% right in what he said in terms of the effect and the importance of 5G and indeed the global challenge of 5G.
He really gets that.
He does, absolutely. And what Ajit Pai, the FCC chairman, announced was an auction of millimeter wave spectrum, which they're calling 5G spectrum, which will take place in December. Now, that spectrum is, frankly, it's useless for rural broadband because while it can be and has got applications in, you know, city centers. So if you're at a bus stop or something and the cell is on the bus stop or you're in a train station, as long as you have direct line of sight to the cell and you are within 250 feet of it, you will have service and the signal. But if you're outside and it's raining or it's foggy or it's dusty or there are leaves,
or you're around the corner,
yeah, it doesn't work.
So this is being described as a game-changing advance for the United States and one that will enable it to compete effectively, to dominate, in fact, not just here, it appears, but elsewhere around the world. That doesn't sound to be right from what you're saying.
That's an interesting view because the rest of the world isn't using millimeter wave spectrum for 5G. They're using what they call sub-6 spectrum, and they're using it because it works. The millimeter wave spectrum stuff, just to put it in context, it wasn't even considered spectrum about 10 years ago or until very recently. You have to auction enormous bands of it because it's so hard to extract any utility out of it. It would be like selling grazing land in the Atacama Desert. I mean, you'd have to buy 10 million acres to be able to feed one cow. And thinking that this is somehow going to, you know, cover rural America, unless you are going to have a cell every 250 feet in rural America and it stops raining and there's no dust and there's no trees and there's no dips and there's no hills, then it isn't going to work. So in good weather, in city centers or in indoor applications where you have direct short line of sight, yes. Think of it like a torch beam. It's like a torch beam.
But let me turn quickly because we'll run out of time here before we run out of things to talk with you about. So what is it Ajit Pai doing here? I mean, this sounds as though if it's not fraudulent, it's certainly misleading.
He's in a tough space, right? The power of AT&T, Verizon, the mobile carrier lobby in the U.S., their regulatory capture ability is spectacular. And by the way, that's not unique to the U.S. That's everywhere in the world. They do not want to see a privately funded, privately operated, privately run wholesale operator in the U.S. because they know it will drop the average price of capacity, which, and by the way, will drop the price of the cost of cell phone service for Americans. And they like, those carriers love the current oligopoly, and that's why the Americans are spending the highest prices in the world for cell phone service.
That should get our attention, whether we're going to allow this to be perpetuated. So Ajit Pai is, in other words, doing the bidding of AT&T and Verizon, the carriers, in making this approach?
He obviously doesn't feel that way. He's operating within the box that he is allowed to operate in. And the spectrum that we need for 5G, that America needs for 5G, is what they call sub-6 spectrum, and that is in the DoD. And by the way, don't listen to me on this. Read the Defense Innovation Board's report that was issued at the beginning of last week, or sorry, the week before. And that report makes exactly this point. And the Defense Innovation Board report is made up of experts in this industry, in security, and that report spells it out absolutely clearly. You need sub-6 spectrum to beat China. You need sub-6 spectrum to lead the world. The U.S. has to do that. That spectrum is in DoD. It shouldn't be taken off DoD. It should be shared. We've talked about that on programs with you before.
Yeah, we have, but just very quickly. The Defense Department, DoD, has need for this spectrum, this sub-6 spectrum. how is it they could make it available for the Internet of Things or all of the other applications for 5G and still be able to support their mission needs?
In many ways, in a similar way to what FirstNet does with public safety spectrum. So FirstNet spectrum gives ruthless preemption rights to, or at least it's supposed to first responders, but for all of the rest of the time that their spectrum is not being used, it's made available for commercial use. In that case, exclusively by AT&T, in the FirstNet case, and plus AT&T gets $6.5 billion of taxpayers' money on top of that. But what DoD can do is keep the spectrum for their missions because they have to have it. They have ruthless preemption, would have ruthless preemption to it. So from their user experience, it feels like there's no one else on that network. But while they're not using it, which in any given geographic location is for 99.9999% of the time, it's not being used by them. It's available on a sub-priority access basis to commercial users on a fully competitive free market basis so that they can use it. And the technology, the network, the operation that would provide that is all privately financed, all privately operated, and all using U.S. technology.
And could be effected more quickly than the approach that we're on now, I take it, and could actually be practicable as opposed to the approach that we're on now, pursuant to this announcement from last week. Is that right?
Well, the announcement last week, that will take, and they said so, it will take years to happen. You will not see a millimeter wave network get right. I mean, they're announcing there's, I think they said 92 sites or something like that. But each of these deployments are one site or two sites or nine sites. They're all city center devices or cells. There's no devices that can use this spectrum practically. And as I say, you have to be within 250 feet of the site.
So we talked about the box that Ajit Pai finds himself in. Clearly, the president is in a box too, if this whole option is excluded for some reason. The president understands the necessity and is articulating it, as you said. He's not being well served by the options that are being presented, apparently. What do we need to do, Declan, to break through this? If the Defense Innovation Board is on board, one would think that that would have some impact on the DoD's thinking on the subject, should it not? And if their thinking is in fact open to the necessity, and I think it seems to me they've got as much of a stake in this working out as anybody. They're going to be using 5G big time. So what's the impediment as things stand now as you see it, and what do we need to do to overcome it?
There's a policy impediment. The decision has to be made, which is, does the U.S. and the West want to be predominant in 5G technology globally? And this is about the world. The carriers love confusing this message, by the way. They talk about what's just happening in the US. This is a global play. So if we want to be predominant, we have to set and deploy the standard that flips the table on the Chinese and that the rest of the world wants and will be willing to adopt and that can be financed. And that is exactly a sub-6 network that is wholesale, open access, privately run, privately operated, and privately led using shared spectrum that currently is in DoD, and I believe should stay in DoD, in the way that we've described. There is precedent for this. It already happens with other spectrum. It is privatization, the opposite of nationalization. There is nothing that is being done today that is delivering serious competition in America that affects price. And ultimately, that's the benchmark. What are Americans paying? Why are they paying the highest prices in the world? Because the system's broken. We have to change that. And the policymakers, senior policymakers, have got to decide whether or not that is something that we want to do. If we are going to surrender this space, by the way, the State Department put out a statement yesterday, and they're absolutely right. America has some of the best and leading 5G technology in the world. Rivada Networks has got IP and patents all over the world relevant to 5G standards. The thing is all of the innovators in America, Europe, and elsewhere, the non-Chinese innovators, We need the space to be able to deploy and do what we do best. And there is a cartel right now that is holding and constraining that development back, trying to slow roll everybody, and unwittingly creating the space for China, which they've exploited. I have no doubt that the president will do the right thing here, and that as he analyzes all of the facts globally, as they're presented to him, that he will chart a path for American victory and for victory of the West in the 5G space. There is still some time to do it. I believe that the president will make the right choice.
He needs to have the choice, is the point, and we hope to help make sure he has it. Declan Gendley, again, thank you very much for your time and the really important contributions you're making, not just on the technical side, but in terms of informing us on the policy side as well. I hope you'll keep up the great work you do at Rivada Networks and come back to us again very soon.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back. It is a delight to say we have in the House, virtually at least, one of my favorite former military officers. He is a retired Air Force Brigadier General by the name of Robert Spalding. His last duty station was as Special Assistant to the Vice Chief of Staff of the United States Air Force, but he's had a very distinguished career, including as a B-2 bomber pilot, as well as the defense attaché in Beijing. He knows probably as much about China and the threats that we're facing from it as anybody in uniform or out, for that matter, and has been spending a very considerable amount of time, including for a while on the Trump National Security Council, trying to sort through the topic of today's show primarily, namely the 5G competition, which the president has said we will win. Rob Spalding, it's so good to have you back. Thank you for taking the time to join us.
Great to be back, Frank.
So, you heard the president's remarks Friday and the proposal that has been offered by the chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, Ajit Pai, to sort of operationalize the president's determination to make spectrum available and otherwise enable the free market, the private sector, to operate in a way that will enable us to prevail in a, well, I consider it a life and death competition with China to dominate the fifth generation wireless technology domain. Confirm, if you will, whether that's in fact what's at stake and what you made of the president's announcement and that of Ajit Pai.
Oh, it's not just 5G and dominating wireless. It's also about a secure internet for the American people. So for me, as I've stated before, I'd rather have 4G if it's not going to be secure because the connectivity is far less. And all the machines that are going to be connected to 5G are really, you know, adding to the danger for the American people. So if we are going to deploy a nationwide 5G network in the United States, it ought to be secure. More importantly, though, I think it's, as has been shown, the Chinese are dominating the information domain globally. And so the idea that we would build a secure nationwide 5G network was also wrapped up in the fact that we were going to offer that to our allies and partners to create a democratic internet, if you will, that protected individuals' data through securing and encrypting the network.
It sounds what's needed. It sounds like what the president has said he wants. He made it very clear right out of the box that it was a secure network. Is that what Ajit Pai's proposal will provide, in your estimation, Rob Spalding?
No, because they're relying on the private sector to actually build a secure encrypted network, and the private sector has no incentive to do so. In other words, if it requires extra money for the network, which I don't think it will, but they may believe it does, they have no incentive to actually build to a standard that would protect Americans' data. That is not their mission. Their mission is really to increase revenue for the shareholder. It's not to protect Americans' data. And so they're not incentivized to build a secure 5G network. More importantly, what Ajit Pai announced doesn't even incentivize them to build a nationwide 5G network, much less secure. They focus primarily on millimeter wave, which, as I've said before, is only for dense metropolitan areas. It doesn't actually get in the suburban and rural areas of the country. And so essentially, they offered some financial inducements, but there's no spectrum available and there's no incentive to build a secure network and secure nationwide 5G network.
So we talked earlier in the program with Declan Ganley, who is an interested party and has an approach that he favors for both access to spectrum and for the private sector through competition building out a capability for a national network covering the entire United States. He considers it to be eminently doable and affordable, provided some steps are taken in terms of how access to that spectrum is obtained, namely on a wholesale competitive basis, and that some of the spectrum, at least, would be spectrum from your old shop, the Defense Department, that has been allocated for their use exclusively to this point. Could you walk us through what you think is needed in that regard? If it's the same, great. If it's not, something else.
Well, let's just go through all the spectrum available in the sub-6 gigahertz band, which is the band that I looked at in my study because it provided the best combination of coverage and capacity. Coverage meaning geographical area and capacity meaning speed and bandwidth and latency. And so one owner of spectrum in this space is Dish Network. Dish Network has about 90 megahertz of spectrum. They could build a nationwide 5G network. Dish Network has a lot of debt. They're currently building out a narrowband IoT with essentially a 4G network.
That's Internet of Things.
Right. But that's a 4G network. It's not a 5G network. And they're doing that in order to prevent the FCC from taking back spectrum because there was a requirement for them to light that spectrum up by a certain time limit. I believe it's coming up in 2020.
Use it or lose it, as they say.
Right. The other owner of nationwide spectrum is Sprint. Now, they own about 150 megahertz in the 2.5 gigahertz band. They could build a 5G network with that spectrum. They have a lot of debt as well. The other owners of spectrum in this space is the C-Band Alliance. That's the 3.7 gigahertz to 4.2 gigahertz. They're currently trying to sell 100 megahertz, I would imagine, to AT&T and 100 megahertz to Verizon in order for them to have nationwide spectrum. That spectrum, I would imagine they value at about $20 billion per 100 megahertz. Of course, both AT&T and Verizon have tremendous debt, and they're not really incentivized to make that purchase anytime soon. Finally, you have what Declan has talked about, which is DoD. They have there are some certain frequencies that are being used for satellite communications and radar that could be made available by the Department of Defense. Department of Defense, having lost spectrum in the past, is not incentivized to give up any of their spectrum to build a nationwide 5G network. So what you have is a combination of old FCC rules in terms of selling spectrum to companies and letting them squat on them and not actually build out, a combination of fear by the Department of Defense about giving up their spectrum for use in 5G, and essentially an overall lack of a vision or strategy for actually making this come to pass. There has been a narrative put forth by the telcos to the administration that they can handle it, that they are going to build a nationwide 5G network. Of course, they have no intention to do so. They have neither the spectrum, or if they have the spectrum, they don't have the ability to raise money because they're too deep in debt. And furthermore, they don't have any incentive to build it securely. So if you want to build a nationwide secure 5G network, you actually have to create the conditions that either force the carriers by telling them, for instance, you could tell Sprint, you either build that nationwide secure network in 3 years as we want, or we're going to take the spectrum back and we're going to give it to somebody that will. the same to Dish Network. You could take the C-band alliance as a bunch of foreign satellite operators. You could essentially take that spectrum back and allocate all 500 megahertz to a company who agreed within 3 years to build a secure nationwide network. Now, as Declan has stated, anybody can raise the capital to do that because the projected amounts, both in terms of GDP gain, which is 1 to 3% for the nation, but also in terms of the revenue that that network would generate, that all that money is available on the capital markets today. So essentially, the administration needs to come up with an incentive plan and a set of both carrots and sticks that forces the private sector to build the network they want.
But the network they need is the point, really. And when I say they, I mean we, the country, the government of the United States, but most especially the people of the United States. And I'm so appreciative of the emphasis that you're placing, not surprisingly, as a distinguished military officer, Rob Spalding, on the importance of security. And it seems to me that an awful lot of Americans have lost what I call national security mindedness, or even really have, I guess, been induced to believe that their own personal privacy of information isn't something that they should be terribly concerned about others having access to, unpermitted access to. That seems to be at cross purposes with the idea that, no, really, we need as a nation to have this Internet of Things, this 5G network-powered, you know, future as secure as we know how to make it for our own purposes as well as that of friendly Western nations, as you also have said. So if you were advising the President of the United States in a nutshell, Rob Spalding, does that mean that the government has to control all of this? Does it mean that the government is taking this out of the hands of the private sector, or is this really a private-public partnership that we need to get from here to there?
Yes, I think it's a public-private partnership. First of all, the president could order the FCC to take spectrum away from those that aren't building it out according to specifications, give it to a company that promises to build out according to specifications. They've already given plenty of financial inducements in terms of the $20 billion for rural. And then the government actually has to be involved with the network in terms of securing and protecting Americans' data.
Yeah. Rob Spalding, thank you for your time today, as well as your both past and continuing service to our country, sir. We deeply appreciate it. We'll look forward to talking with you again in the near future.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back. We are joined, I'm very pleased to say, by Gordon Chang, one of our duty experts on matters involving Asia and specifically our vital security interests there. He is also, I'm pleased to say, the duty expert for an awful lot of other people, including, of course, Fox News and The Daily Beast. He is the author of three important books, The Coming Collapse of China, Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World, and Losing South Korea, his most recent from Encounter Books. Gordon, it's good to have you back. Welcome.
Oh, thank you so much, Frank.
Well, we've been talking throughout the program, Gordon, about the president's most recent statement last Friday concerning 5G. And while he didn't mention China by name, he alluded to the fact that we do have enemies and why we must not allow them to win the competition for 5G. We've been hearing from others about this, but I think a few people appreciate better than you how the effort to dominate the 5G domain by China represents part and parcel of their sort of global ambitions and what they're doing to try to realize them. Tell us what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, as an initial matter, I thought it was very important that President Trump did use the word enemy. He didn't say adversary. And he was clearly referring to China because he was talking about 5G. And the 5G conversation is all about the Chinese. The important thing here is that China wants to dominate all telecommunications. It is actively behind the 5G sale of equipment to countries for 5G. And clearly they're doing this because they are going to be able to get information out of Huawei servers, backdoor it into China. And they will feed that into not only their Ministry of State Security apparatus, but they'll also use it for artificial intelligence, because the more data AI has, the better it is. And China, of course, with no prohibitions on data collection, is going by its very nature to have a head start on AI. Even though our AI might be better as a theoretical matter, and that's a big issue, but even if it is better, China will have far much more data. And this is reason why, one of the reasons why Beijing is so much behind Huawei.
Yeah, and indeed controlling Huawei. Gordon, I was listening to a podcast by the Financial Times service recently, in which they were talking about the role that Microsoft China is playing in helping, through ostensibly unclassified research, Chinese universities very closely tied to the People's Liberation Army. This would seem to underscore your point that our notional advantage in the sort of theoretical aspects of artificial intelligence is may not be as great as one would like. And in practice, it is being brought, well, weaponized, I think it's fair to say, by the Chinese to a degree that we're not anywhere near.
Yeah. Well, Microsoft published three research papers in cooperation with the China's National University of Defense Technology, which is controlled by the Central Military Commission. In other words, the People's Liberation Army. And this type of cooperation must be criminalized. There needs to be legislation, of course, but in as legislation works through its Congress, I believe President Trump should issue a national emergency order banning this type of work. And of course, it's not just Microsoft, it's also Google. Google has many cooperations in China right now on AI, and we need to stop all of these activities.
I couldn't agree more. Gordon, let me ask you about something you wrote about recently that underscores that this enemy is operating not just in the cyber domain or artificial intelligence and where it can, extracting information from various American companies and universities and so on, but also in the Caribbean, our so-called backyard. Tell us what they're up to there.
Yeah. China is investing heavily in the Caribbean. For instance, as Evan Ellis of the Army War College, perhaps America's number one expert on the Caribbean, has been saying that China's investment per capita in the Caribbean is much higher than it is in the rest of Latin America. And that doesn't make sense from an economic point of view, because there are not that many natural resources in the Caribbean, and there's not much of a market for Chinese manufacturers. What they're doing is strategic because, as he points out, the Caribbean, they view the Caribbean like they view the South China and East China Seas, and they want to dominate it. Also, in Cuba, they may have as many as three listening posts directed toward the United States. So there's a military dimension as well. And finally, the Chinese are putting about $3 billion into the Freeport container port, which could end up being a Chinese naval base. So that's 55 miles from Palm Beach. We've got to be extremely concerned because, you know, we have not paid that much attention to the Caribbean. We absolutely have to do that now.
Gordon, I just want to repeat something you just said, and that is that the Chinese are viewing the Caribbean, that of course comes right up against our coastline, as part of or very comparable to the South China Sea, which of course abuts their coastline, and they have now militarized through the creation and fortification of various islands in the area. The implications that this is what's their agenda for our own, as I say, backyard is staggering, especially when you look at how little capability we currently have in that region in terms of naval forces, in terms of bases and the like. It's astonishing, really, when you put it that way.
Yeah, we have one naval base in the Caribbean. That's Guantanamo. And the Chinese are obviously going to be looking at Cuba, but they're also, as I mentioned, this container port. They turned a container port in Sri Lanka, the Colombo International Terminal. They docked a submarine and its tender there in September and October 2014, two separate occasions. That's a Chinese-funded port. They've taken over a container port in Sri Lanka because they debt-trapped the government there. That probably will end up being a facility for the Chinese Navy. And so we see the same thing happening in Freeport, which is a lot closer to home. And you've got to remember that China is also in other parts of Latin America, such as Venezuela, where they have another listening post on a Venezuelan military base. So this is something where we face them across the board. And by the way, both the Bush, George W. Bush and Obama administrations paved China's way into the region by helping China become a member of the Inter-American Development Bank. These China-friendly policies have ended, but we're going to feel the effects of them for quite some time.
Yeah, well, they've ended in the sense that we're not compounding them, but the institutional penetration, I've been hearing about the International Monetary Fund most recently, is something that is not being stopped, let alone reversed, Gordon. This is really such a key point because what you might add to your list is, of course, the domination of both ends of the Panama Canal, without the free use of which we can't move naval forces such as we have from one ocean to another should the need arise. This is deeply troubling. I believe there are also Chinese operating ports in the United States as well, or certainly very active in them. So a very, very important front in which we must be much more engaged. Gordon, thank you again for participating in the Committee on the Present Danger roundtable discussion last week. You made a very important contribution to it, and I think you've emphasized exactly these kinds of concerns, and I commend to our audience the videotape of you and your remarks there at presentdangerchina.org. Finally, Gordon, this is the 50th anniversary of a very sad day in the Pacific for American forces and interests. Tell us about it.
Yes, 50 years ago today, the North Koreans shot down a U.S. Navy EC-121, killing all 31 crew members. This was in international airspace. This is the single greatest loss of American servicemen in the Cold War, and it has gone unavenged. And we've got to remember this, Frank, not only because of those whom we lost, but also because we're now seeking a cooperative relationship with the same regime that killed those Americans. This is something we can never forget.
Gordon, we can't. Could you just say a word about the supposed ally we have in contending with this threat from North Korea, namely South Korea? Moon Jae-in was, of course, seeing the president last week. Just very quickly, what was the takeaway from their conversations?
Moon wanted the United States to further relax sanctions on North Korea. President Trump wisely refused that. Moon has now gone back and trying to stitch up a fourth summit between himself and Kim Jong-un. And although Kim has promised to go to Seoul, Moon is saying that he will go anywhere to meet Kim.
Gordon Chang, thank you for your time today. Come back to us again next week. Hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.